My father's legacy will always be my father's legacy. What he built, what he created, his vision, his humanity will always be his and will never be taken away from him. What I do now and my siblings do now, that will be our legacy.
Family life is essential. Jim and I are on a mission to help you live the best one. You'll hear personal stories from thought leaders of strengths and struggles with proven strategies to help you make the most of your 18 summers. I'm your co-host, Jamie Shields.
We are back with another candid conversation with Sarah Heiner. Sarah is the founder of Bottom Line Inc. And I think you're going to see a lot of, first of all, Sarah, thank you for being here. We appreciate your time today.
Good morning.
Oh, my pleasure. Although I must clarify, my father actually founded Bottom Line Inc. My brother, my sister, and I all work there and own it. My mother still works there. I tell my children I've been working since I'm 12.
Wow.
So, which is true. Total true story.
That is great.
I want to hear more about that.
I mean, that's a true family business. And the reason we were put in touch with you is our core values. What I loved about, you know, going through your information and writings was you really focus on health, wealth, and relationships. And it's something that Jamie and I stress in our retreats and our workshops. These are three subjects that are so important, but really focused on in school. And we feel it's the parents' job to step up and really lead and teach these areas.
Well, I personally think so. So bottom line has been, we pride ourselves on giving actionable advice, right? So most media sources out there, they'll kind of tell you the what. There's a new vaccine, right? The mortgage rates are down, whatever it is. But what does that mean to me? So the hard thing is that people don't necessarily know what to do about that information. When this vaccine comes out, if it ever comes out for COVID, is that right for you? Should you be first online for it? And so we talk to the top experts and give people the information that they need to be able to make the choices in their lives, because your financial situation, your health situation is different than mine. So yeah, you need to have the basic pieces of information and then you make the decisions for yourself. We're very big on personal responsibility and being kind of the master of your lives, right? As far as parents are concerned, parents are the masters of their household, right? Mm-hmm. And I think I wrote a blog recently, actually I republished with a new lead on it, a blog about parents' roles as role models. And I think that parents have forgotten that, and that we have this grand responsibility. Children are sponges, that they look to us to help them learn about how to behave, about how to respect. And, you know, besides the basic choices of, you know, how to cook dinner or how to, you know, clean up the room or make their bed. And parents have forgotten that somehow over the years.
Yeah.
And I look at, you know, I was prompted by these angry mobs that were burning down the streets. And all those people started out as innocent children. Mm-hmm. And, you know, as my kids grew up, I have a 23-year-old and a 26-year-old. And I remember kindergarten, those kids were all so innocent and so sweet. And then watching them grow, it saddened me a little bit as you watch them divert onto their paths and you could see who was kind of heading for trouble a little bit and who wasn't. And where did that go and where did that come from and what were those paths going to be? And parents, I think, really need to understand the power of themselves in that process. And a lot of parents, I think, have you know, they've wanted to be friends. They wanted to be the cool mom. And that's not an effective strategy in helping your kids be strong and solid and self-confident.
That's so true. Someone once said something very similarly, like, I'm not your friend. Like, I don't want to be your friend. And it really stuck to me when I heard them lead by that example, because, you know, you want to be liked. You don't want your children to dislike you. Right. But at the same time, if you're friends, then they're not seeing you in that role model position.
Right.
They're seeing you as a peer. And really, you're, like you said, I mean, that was wonderful. I just took a note. Your role is to be the role model.
And I always told them that my job, when they would be yelling at me, that's, you know, because they weren't always so happy with me.
Right.
But I always said my job was to help them become good citizens. Yeah. That was my job, to develop them into independent, you know, contributing, smart, responsible citizens.
Yeah.
And that hopefully they like me in the process, and hopefully that, you know, the love and all of that comes along. But my first priority was, what were they going to be when they were out in the world on their own?
Yeah, for sure. For sure. And I love, like you said, you want things to be actionable. And if they don't, if you're just leaving them out there with the what, not the how, then we haven't really done our jobs as leaders, like bottom line, to teach so that they can actually make good of what's coming at them. And what's funny is when we were prepping to talk to you today, health, wealth, and relationships are all under attack right now in all ways.
Well, yes.
And a lot of parents are coming to us and saying, what should we do? And what would you say, again, I know we're only on for a short time, but again, people want that bottom line. What would be the advice to families out there struggling with health, struggling with wealth now because of the issue, struggling with relationships with their own family and outside their family, just with so many different divisions occurring? What would be the Sarah Heiner advice on this?
So many directions I could go on that. Let me try and unpeel it for a second. Let me go back first to the first part of it in terms of helping children make decisions and helping people make decisions. No, parents have been stepping in to solve their kids' fights. Mm-hmm. And that's gone on somehow as baby boomers. Like somehow we decided that we had to save our kids. And we didn't let our kids, I'll call it, fight their own fights and learn to stand on their own. And we thought that we were loving them by not letting them get hurt at all, but it actually lowers their self-esteem when they can't fight their fights. I don't mean fight, but they can't defend themselves. So my older daughter, seventh grade, all of a sudden, I'll call it, you know what, odd girl out, like, you know, so where suddenly her best friends were suddenly turning on her and saying bad things about her and talking about her behind her back. And she was really distraught by it. And she'd come home and we'd talk about it. And I'd say, do you want me to talk to the counselor? And she said, no, she really didn't want to do that. She wanted to handle it. And so through a grand period of time talking to her and with her best friend and different strategies and tactics, and part of it was happening at the lunch table. There's nothing worse in school than the lunch table. But she came home one day and said, my friend and I sat at a different lunch table today. And they were so empowered and they were so proud that she made that choice. And it wasn't me fixing it. And I think parents forget to give their kids, to let their kids figure out their problems. Problem solving is so huge for kids to be able to do. And when parents solve it for them, when they pick up the phone and call the school, when they check on every element of homework, it's not helping their children. I never check my kids' homework. Honestly, if they asked for help, I would help them. But other than that, it was between them and the school. Yeah. It wasn't my relationship. Right.
The same way. So, I'm not a math teacher. I'm not sure. So.
Right. Exactly. But it was their job. If the school called me and they weren't getting their homework done, now I'm in it. But yeah. Other than that, that wasn't my job. Right. So they have to be responsible. And a lot of parents, I think, in the name of love, have forgotten how to let their kids be responsible. Yeah. So that's part one.
Yeah. And there's so much dignity to allowing someone to struggle and then rise. Right. So you really are stripping them of their dignity, their honor, their self-respect. Right. If it's like, oh, well, my parents know how to save me.
Right. Well, not only that, they don't realize it, that in the mind of the kid actually gets the message of my parents don't trust me to solve it on my own.
Yep.
And people don't realize that. It actually destroys the kid's esteem. Because the kids want to do it. They're so proud of what they can do, right? Starting at potty training, right? Mommy, I made a pee-pee. And, you know, it goes on from there. I can make my own breakfast. They want to be able to do those things. They want to pour their own milk. And if it spills on the counter, okay, I'll clean it up. Right? But as the parents who want to step in and fix it all and have it all perfect, it doesn't let the kids build their self-esteem. And it builds this like craziness of it has to be perfect. No, you know, did you make chocolate chip cookies with your kids and they weren't mixing it right? So the parents would step in and tell them how to mix it. Stop. Like, okay, it'll be fine. They're making it. Right.
Yeah. And it should be messy in the beginning. Kids should be, Jamie always says that, say messy's good. Messy's creative. Messy,
the process, right?
Messing's the process of learning. You know, even, and I know you work with a lot of in financial advice, you know, we work with a lot of entrepreneur families. One of the biggest things we've seen, the biggest mistakes, is entrepreneurs who their kids show a little bit of interest in entrepreneurship and starting to do their own businesses. And the parent steps in, takes over, designs the business, sets it up, runs it, and then says the kid's doing it. And I said, that's, you're really setting a bad
that's horrible.
Lineage, right? Yeah, because you can see, especially now that you've taken over the reins, I'm sure you had to earn your way in. And it was with, if your dad had been holding, you know, your hand through it all, he probably wanted messiness. He probably wanted outside the lines.
Oh, I promise. No, my father wanted me to toe his lines, but you know, so it was a fascinating experience. But the kids did not, I did not go straight into, I worked in the business, middle school, high school, you know, college summers. And then I left. I was actually in advertising for 8 years. And then I came in. Wow. And then I left. And then I came back. So it was, the kids were actually held to far higher standards than anyone else that was at the company, which was fine by me. I never wanted to have the, you know, lucky sperm pool, you know, privilege. And I never wanted anyone to look at me as though that was why I was there or how I was there.
Yeah.
All right. So you want me to talk about health or money? I can talk about either of them. I have opinions.
I'd like to stay on money since we're there now, especially since you have this experience with family business. What a lot of entrepreneurs want their children involved in their businesses. What is a healthy way to get them involved, and what is an unhealthy way to get them involved?
Well, let's see. So for my family, the family business, I'll call it, was the family activity. And so some families ski, some families boat, some families hike, some families, you know, it's Little League. My family, literally the business was the family activity. And for good and for bad, but that's what has held us together for many, many years. I did not, so going into the third generation, we are not insistent on the third generation coming in. It's extremely complicated. And I think that young people need to be on their passion, not on my passion, right? So we were part of that, and my mission in life fit very well with my father's mission of wanting to help people have better lives and have better information to be able to make their decisions. But I think entrepreneurs really have to be careful and let their kids explore. And you know what? I have a thing about legacy. Who cares? Honestly. Let me have my legacy. So when my father passed away in 2013, and I made some changes at the business because we had to, the world was changing. I had to make some significant changes, including changing the company name from, it was originally Boardroom Incorporated because that was our first publication. Changed it to Bottom Line Inc. because that was the consumer brand that everybody knew so well. But I made some other changes as well. And people questioned it, but my father's legacy will always be my father's legacy. What he built, what he created, his vision, his humanity will always be his and will never be taken away from him. What I do now and my siblings do now, that will be, I call it, our legacy. And I think younger generations have to be free to their legacy. Just because I built a company, that's fine. And again, to the point of you want to generously help your kids out. You want to generously have them benefit from all the hard work. And I'm a firm believer that even if it's a privately held business, even if the kids aren't working there, if dad or mom, because it's not necessarily dad, if mom is, you know, working 15 hours a day or traveling a lot or whatever, the kids are supporting them by not getting in trouble, by like there's, if everybody helps contribute to that family business, whether they're, you know, on the payroll in the office or not. But that's, you know, that's dad's, that's, you know, that's the parent legacy, and let the kids do their thing as well.
I love that.
Yeah. We talk to our children about that limited energy bank account. And how if I'm having to spend my energy on correcting your behavior or calling your teachers or separating you or asking you to do chores, it depletes my energy bank to do things like work efficiently to provide for fun vacations or work efficiently to provide, you know, whatever it is that we all may be working hard for together. So I think that's a great point that you make.
Yeah.
That, you know, I'm, even if you're not working in the family business, part of your job is to make sure that I can work in the family business.
Well, it all contributed. Like I always said that, you know, we all helped as we were all really good kids. So we didn't distract my dad from doing what he needed to do. And my mom, like my mom still works. Honestly, she's so frustrated being quarantined. She's going to be 88 years old. She'd much rather be coming to the office than being at home. Yeah, no, it's great. I want to say something about money. Can I talk about money and kids and teaching?
Yeah, let's get right into it. Please do.
So I can't tell you how many parents, when my kids went to college, would complain about their kids spending too much. right? They well, what did you do with it? Well, I gave them my credit card, and the kids are always going to Starbucks. They don't give them. They don't give them budgets. They don't have the kids have bank accounts. The kids aren't accountable for their money. You need to teach your kids financial accountability as well. My kids, from very early on, they had their saving, and they, you know, the old take, you know, half your birthday money goes in savings. How, you know, you can spend part of it, you save some of it, you give part of it. But when my kids got to college, we worked out a budget and said, all right, here's how, what do you think you're going to need for spending money, for food, for books? And we worked out whatever that might be. And I wrote them a check. And thankfully, thank God for them. Like, they did not, you know, have to do work study and stuff. They worked in the summers. But so I know that that piece is a rarity. But I wrote a check to them. I said, here's your money, go. And I didn't manage their money. They could spend it. They could run out of it and then they were done, or they could save it. They could spend less on it and then they got to save the extra. But I made them responsible for managing that money.
Yes.
And it continued on when they went off meal plan. We worked out a grocery budget. Here you go. Go buy groceries. Figure it out. Mm-hmm. And as a result, both my kids are out of college and they're both financially independent. And they both, you know, saving very well and on their own. And I haven't been paying for them at all.
Love it.
That's
so, love it. Yeah. You have to. Well, we've seen, we call it the endless ATM. And I'm sure you saw, I had kids around me, they had what was known as an endless ATM. This ATM card they just stuck in, it was endlessly filled.
No responsibility.
And they are struggling in their own affairs. And a lot of them got themselves into some pretty downward spirals too, going from addiction to this to that, because there was no budgeting. There was no self-responsibility.
Right. Right. Exactly. Well, and actually it's funny. My younger daughter was a little bit more of a spender than my older one. So because both my kids did have my credit card for emergencies, right? Or if I want them to run an errand for me or something. So they had it. But I watched my younger daughter start using it a little more pizza in college than the other one. Mom, can I do this? So I actually co-signed and got her own credit card. So she had her name on it. She was all proud. And she had her budget, you know, she still had her money in the bank. I said, okay, you're going to use your expenses on this card and your job is to pay that bill. And I got out of it. And she had to be responsible for it. She had to be responsible for paying that bill.
Yeah.
And she is now. She doesn't miss a payment. Never has, actually. Never, ever has.
No. It's those little steps, that little, you know, it's almost like an exercise program where if they don't learn to do the financial lifting on their own, then somehow magically, like you said, it's being lifted for them every month, and typically utilities and credit cards and little things are just, they're done.
Magic.
It kind of sets them up for a disadvantage once they get out there. That's what we think.
Anyway. Yeah.
Well, without a doubt. And, you know, as they say, adulting's hard, right? No one taught us about how to rent an apartment, how to get insurance. You figure it out along the way. But we had to. Right? Our parents were throwing us out there. I had to go and figure that stuff out. And it's so much more complicated now. I mean, obviously electronic banking and everyone has far more credit cards. I mean, when I got out of college, I remember when the ATM, the first ATM that showed up at all, right? And credit, like, it was a huge deal. So life is very complicated for these kids now. But they have to learn. We support them. We help guide them in their decisions. And we help guide them of, you need to think about this. So I went with my kids to look at their apartments, teach them how to look at them. What are the things that you need to look at? My husband would teach them about mechanical things and stuff. And then they learn. But the parents have to be there. Like, we don't, just because they graduate high school, a lot of parents think that their kids they're done being parents when the kids reach a certain age. No, they still need our wisdom and guidance. We never stop helping them learn.
So true. So true.
And thinking of it like a business as well, you know, your business never gets to a point where you can just, like, oh, it's just going to continue to do its thing and make money. Now I have some structure. They're going to, you know, everybody's got this. It's just, you know, and likewise, you often refer to different businesses that you have as, well, that business is a toddler. It needs me a little bit more. Well, that business, so it's interesting to see, you know, you have to, there is some crossover, but thinking of how, you know, sometimes we have clients that are a little more business minded and they totally get it. Like, oh, my business needs me. Well, even after the children grow up, they still need that constant tending and touching and, you know, whether it's a team meeting once a day or once a week or however it may be, but just staying involved and continuing those reps, I guess, like to go back to your workouts?
They evolve into different stages, right? So, you know, a startup company needs a different kind of attention than a mature company. My company, you know, an information company, obviously in the last, you know, 10 years, the whole information world has been just pounded by the internet. Someone decided all that information should be free. So how am I going to get people to pay for it? Yep. So you have to shift in your leadership strategies in order to keep your business current. And now, frankly, it's interesting, everyone working from home, how do you maintain corporate culture? Everyone says, oh, we're working so well from home. This Zoom thing is great. It's hard to maintain culture. It's hard to grow your business, bring in new ideas and significant change from afar. Even if you've, like my people, I've got people that I've worked together for 25 years and we know each other really well. But still, a leader and the entrepreneur has to keep them connected and keep the culture messages and the mission messages connected, because it's really easy for everybody to just go in their little caves, keep their heads down and just going on automatic pilot, which will work for a while, but will not work long term.
That reminds me of even bringing everything home again for the family. I think that you could easily get into a rhythm of saying, oh, well, that person does school in that room and this person does school in that room and I do my work here. And somehow it's 5 o'clock at night and everyone goes, well, what's for dinner? And you think, oh, I've been in my cave. And what do we do? And so it's an easy way to become stagnant in your culture, even in your own home. I think that we were seeing and hearing that from other people saying, gosh, we're together all the time, but it seems like we've just completely lost any form of that culture and values. That's very interesting.
It's been really hard. Actually, thank goodness. I don't know if you heard before, my little dog was barking.
No.
Thank goodness for the dog, because my daughter, I was telling you before we started broadcasting that my 23-year-old lives in New York, so she's been home with us for the last 3 months. And so my husband, my daughter, and I will often take the dog for a walk at lunchtime, and then we'll discuss dinner.
Great. And
then what's the dinner plan?
Right.
Then it's a negotiation of who's exercising at what time and what, you know, what. So I'll start dinner, someone else will finish. My younger daughter actually is the best cook in the house. Which is awesome. So,
works well. Well, speaking of that, health. A lot of people that have reached out to us, you know, there's almost like this admittance saying, I've let my health go.
Oh, over COVID.
Over COVID, I haven't exercised. I'm just eating like I'm a 13-year-old left at home with a closet full of junk food. You know, what are you seeing for health? Because as you said, if you're a leader of your business and your family, and you're letting your health go, I think that's going to spiral everything, the relationships, the culture. So what is your overall take on that?
Well, there's no question about it. And I grew up a child of the 60s on Pop-Tarts and Fruit Loops and ate horribly, horribly. Yep, my mid-30s, all that caught up with me. I had a health challenge and I had to literally give up on sugar, wheat, dairy, and didn't realize how bad I felt when I was eating that way until I stopped.
Wow.
And then I realized, wow, if I have a Snickers bar, my head is flying. I'm ineffective. Like, it just doesn't work. So health critical. And yes, we're all doing our fair share of comfort food and all that sort of stuff, but movement is critical for every aspect of your body. I want to shift a little bit and talk about our immune systems. So everybody, we all want to get out of this darn quarantine, right? Everyone's wishing that there's a vaccine. They're wishing that there's a treatment. It's a virus. Maybe they'll get a vaccine, but it takes years. Anyone that's rushing to these January vaccines, I'm not getting on the first line on that. It takes time to test them thoroughly. Viruses historically, you can treat symptoms. They don't get cured, right? Historically. So there isn't going to be a cure per se. They're just trying to keep symptoms so that you can get through it and your body does what it needs to do. So while we're washing hands and staying away and wearing masks, the most critical thing you can do is have a strong immune system. The most critical thing you can do is get sleep, eat healthy. So a doctor that I was interviewing, I've been doing these Facebook Lives actually on our Bottom Line Inc. Facebook page. Join us.
Yeah.
He said a can of sugared soda will reduce your immune function by 30% for 3 hours after you drink it.
Wow.
One can of soda, right? So as you're eating your Cheetos and as you're eating your pizza and all that sort of stuff, you're counteracting your ability, you're increasing your risk of getting sick. So we don't want to get COVID. We're all worried about wearing masks and protecting grandma and whoever else from getting sick. And yet the worse we will anybody actually shift their dietary patterns or their sleep patterns or their exercise patterns to reduce their risk of getting sick. Because the fact of the matter is the vast majority of people that are dying have comorbidities.
Yeah.
They are not well. It's not, for the most part, it's not healthy people. There are always outliers. Yes, they're like, wow, but that five-year-old got it. There's some of that. But in everything, in chickenpox, some kid will die from it, from the flu, right? So this virus is under the microscope of every side effect and every oddball person that died from it. No disrespect, because, you know, tragically, again, well over 100,000 people have died. But the vast majority of those people have had are either extremely old and vulnerable immune systems, or they're obese, or they're diabetic and their blood sugar is out of control. They have other reasons that put make them vulnerable to sickness. It's easy to get your blood sugar in control. It's easy to lose some weight. Yeah. And even the sickest, most vulnerable people, highest stat I've read is about 25-28% death rate. So the vast majority of people are healing from this. Right? This is not the bubonic plague.
Yeah.
Anyway, so in terms of health, I'm on my little soapbox. I apologize. You hit my Achilles heel. It kills me, right? It kills me. Oh, you know, they all want the drug. That's going to cost thousands of dollars. They're going to complain about healthcare costs. And all you have to do is eat some healthier food, exercise, go for a walk every day, get out in the sun. They find a high correlation between low vitamin D levels and a higher incidence of sickness. Now that's happened. They've discovered that before with cancer, with other diseases, but with COVID as well. Lower vitamin D levels, higher incidence of getting sick. So either take supplements for it or get out in the sun.
Outside.
Also, right. Yeah. Zinc is actually very protective. People can be zinc deficient. Taking zinc supplements, nobody's talking about it. The doctors aren't talking about it, but zinc supplements can help defend. There's been research on it.
Good. Yeah. Well, now I'm thinking too, we don't drink soda, but I was like, wow, to just up your odds 30%, just don't have the soda. I mean, that's a really simple action step right there.
It's just no redeeming value in soda. I love soda. I love, you know, but so.
When I was doing the math in my head and I'm like, well, if a soda is that, because you started listing some other foods and I'm like, okay, so this is 30% for 3 hours. Then what if with that soda, you also ate like pizza and then some cookies. Uh-huh. And then, so how much percentage and then for how long? And I'm wondering in my head, like, wow, you know, some teens, like when our son started driving, he sometimes goes to the store and buys food that I would never allow him to eat because now he has freedom. And so in my head, I'm like, oh, I need to do a little math with him on, okay, if you eat this and it reduces that, you know, it's just a good awareness of where your body is, or these energy drinks that I've seen his friends drink. And I'm like, just so you know, teenagers have had their hearts explode from this.
Oh, Red Bull. Yeah. Well, you know, it's hard. And it's not to say never have any of it, right? We all have cookie. We all have birthday cake. We had neighborhood pizza in our cul-de-sac last night. I love pizza, but I also had a lot of salad with it. I had salad for breakfast this morning. I don't have donuts for breakfast. I literally had salad and chicken for breakfast. No joke. So, you know, you balance it all out so that if in the net you're making healthy decisions, sure, you can have your treats, but they're treats. They're not, you know, they're not breakfast. Exactly. A donut is not breakfast.
Huge difference. Huge.
Yes. Right.
Speaking of which, I could keep talking for hours, but I know we have to be respectful of your time on the overall. But we like to ask a question looking way down the line for Sarah Heiner. We always go and ask our people about their 75-year-old self. You know, they're going to be a little wiser. They're going to have been through more experience. It's a crazy time right now, as we talked about, in health, wealth, and relationships. What do you think your 75-year-old self, and what do you think the advice would be that it would give now?
So I think, to me, right now, the hardest thing that's going on socially is the social pressure of opinions and the intolerance of opinion diversity. And I've had both my kids say to me, they're really confused because the messaging is so destructive and so attacking and et cetera. And so I think what I would say to myself is stay centered, stay true to your beliefs and what you know is right and wrong. And again, if you stay on that course and you live, you make the decisions in your sphere of influence that I can control every day. I can't control some crazy, horrible police officer in Minneapolis, but I can control who I touch today. And I can, so, you know, no matter what the noise is out there, if I stay centered at what I know is right and I make those right decisions, that, you know, just trusting myself and my values and not being vulnerable to all that, I'll call it social influence, because it's really loud and it's really hard.
Yeah. No, that's powerful. Stay centered. I love it. I love it. Where can people find out more about you and Bottom Line Inc., Sarah? Because we want to make sure our tribe reaches out if they want more.
Thank you. That's great. So our website is bottomlineinc.com. And so you can, that's kind of Master Blaster Central. Socially, if you look for Bottom Line Inc., we are on Facebook, we're on Instagram, we're, you know, all the usual places. I do write a blog every week called Common Threads. I have a podcast called Bottom Line Advocator, which is on Apple and Spotify and wherever your fine podcasts are. And you can find them on our website as well. Okay. And we've been doing some Facebook Lives as well, as I said, on our Bottom Line Inc. Facebook.
So, excellent.
Yeah. Excellent. Well, we'll look forward to learning more from you. Thank you so much.
Yeah, thanks for being here. And again, if you guys want more from Sarah, please reach out to her. And we appreciate you shedding your wisdom on health, wealth, and relationships, which are very important, especially in today's world. So thank you for sharing with us.
Thank you. I really appreciate it. It's been great being here.
Thanks for joining the 18 Summers podcast and putting your family in priority position. Subscribe and leave a review and help other families just like you.